Listen up. This guy's got something to say to you and the horse you rode in on. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. This is the Ron Van Dam Emporium of Craziness. How are you today? Good to be with you. Okay, sit down, shut up. I'll take it from here. While the show is on, you're welcome to meditate. Okay, go on. As an extra bonus on today's show, halfway through I'll be handing out sandwiches. Place your order right now. Yes, you in the back? Turkey? Sure. How about you? Turkey with roasted peppers. What the hell do you think this is? Although that does sound good, doesn't it? Well, here we are again. here we are again. What day of the week is this? Does anybody know? Raise your hand if you know what day of the week it is. Nobody's responding. It's Thursday. Am I right? Is it? It's Monday? No. What day is it? Thursday. That's what I thought. We're more than halfway through July. Can you believe that? More than halfway through July. And this is crazy, man. Yesterday I was told by a friend, you should stay 20 feet away from people. I thought, is that an insult or are you trying to be safe? That's enough of the beginning of the show when I talk over the music. How are you doing today? I actually care. Well, I got to say the one good thing about all of this is that I go outside and I walk a lot out of boredom. But I do a lot of walking. I do. My feet love me. And I'm very close to my dogs and my pets right now. They're used to having me around, and I feel like my dog is saying to me, can't you go back to work or something? Can't you, like, go do something? I mean, I feel close to you, but enough is enough. Oh, my God. Go out sometimes. Leave me alone. Let me sleep. Dogs love to sleep. Cats love to sleep even more than dogs. I like to sleep even more than dogs and cats. There's nothing more relaxing to me than seeing a cat sleeping with that little purring going on. If a person purred, they'd have to go into a sleep lab. They'd have kind of some kind of sleep apnea or something. But a cat purring is very, very comforting. I love sleeping with animals. Oh, no, wait. Let me change that. I love watching animals sleep because they seem so calm. I think I've told you this before. I want so much to be able to meditate. I think that is a real talent where you can disconnect from the real world, which typically is a horrible place to be these days. You disconnect and you just lie there and you're in an altered state where your soul takes over and you're relaxed and every muscle in your body and every fiber of your being is just totally relaxed and refreshed and re-energized. At least that's what they tell me. But it sounds so invigoratingly wonderful, but yet I have trouble meditating because I cannot make my mind a blank. I can't do it. There's always something going on in there. I've got like chambers in my brain that are, all the doors are open. I can't shut this thing down. So I try to meditate, and then what I'm thinking about as I'm trying to meditate is that I'm trying to meditate. That's what I'm thinking about. They say, well, Ron, imagine a very serene, tranquil place, like maybe a waterfall or something. And, you're just standing there looking at the waterfall, just sitting on a bench, relaxing. Now, are you starting to feel relaxed and tranquil? Is your mind starting to clear? No, I'm picturing the waterfall. And to be honest with you, now I have to pee. So it's just, it doesn't work with me. Although it does help move my bladder, which is something that we all need to do every once in a while, but not when you're trying to meditate, my God. There's this old adage that if you have trouble sleeping, then just close your eyes, imagine sheep jumping over a fence and count the sheep. And I'm thinking, this is supposed to relax me. That's like, don't people get paid to count sheep, like on a ranch or something? Why am I doing this for free? And how does counting sheep relax your mind? I feel so relaxed. It's like I'm counting sheep. What are you talking about? Anyway, later on today's show, I have a very interesting guest, Dr. Gail Saltz. She's been with us before. She has an interesting view on people. My view on people is quite simple. They're annoying. That's really no other. I've just cut that interview short by like 20 minutes. They're annoying. People are annoying. I was watching the news yesterday, and they were interviewing people about the pandemic. Did you know we were in one, by the way? I don't want this to be a news program, but things are kind of screwed up right now, but they'll be okay someday. Hopefully. So I'm watching about, and they're interviewing people on the street, and they said, what have you learned from so far from this big social experiment we're going through? And the lady said, I've learned that people are really good. That's what I've learned, that there are so many good people. And I stopped myself from being too critical, but yes, we have discovered many, many good people. But don't you know we've also discovered some real idiots? And we'll start at the top in the White House. I mean, that's not a discovery. That's more or less of a confirmation. I've also, in my travels, met some real, real idiots during this time who disrespect other people, who say, hey, I'll do what I want. I'll wear a mask if I want to wear a mask. I won't if I won't. That's a free country and I don't want to wear it. I said, well, thank you very much, a-hole, for putting us all in jeopardy. God. So I've met some selfish, horrible, despicable human beings, as well as some wonderful, caring individuals. But don't go walking in the street saying, I've discovered that everybody is good. Oh, come on. Seriously? Anyway, let's move on. Sorry. Didn't want to go there. Did not want to go there. I've got a message on this show until this whole thing is over. Wear your freaking mask. Wear it. If I see another idiot walking down the street without a mask with the attitude, well, I don't have to wear it. I feel fine. Oh, you don't understand. That's not what this is about, that you feel fine. Oh, God. God. All right, I made my point. So Dr. Gail Saltz will join us. I have, and she says that, you know, everybody has a special talent. And if you have a condition like ADD, ADD, OD, ODDD, ADDO, any one of those conditions that have a lot of letters in them, that you might also have some incredibly special talents because of your special abilities. So she brings out the best in people, And that's when I started thinking a couple of days ago, who is normal? Do I know any normal people? And the answer was so quick to come to my head. No, I don't. Nobody's normal. So now I don't know what the definition of normal is. I think it's Trump that screwed me up. If everything that seemed normal now is not normal, everything that is abnormal now seems normal. Foundation, gone. Feet on the ground, gone. It's just gone. It doesn't exist anymore. What is normal? And people are using the phrase the new normal. What the hell are you talking about? What's normal? What is normal? I don't know any normal people. Everybody I know is abnormal. There's something seriously wrong with them. They've got a personality quirk or some type of real personality problem. Myself included, and certainly you. I don't know you, but I think you have a problem too. Even happy people, even people that are constantly happy and wonderful and everything's rosy and great. And we love these kind of people because they are so hopeful and they make you smile and laugh and feel good about yourself. Even those people are abnormal. That's not normal. You're supposed to be somewhat depressed about everything. You're supposed to have some struggles in life. If you're going through life just like a cheerleader, there's something wrong with you. You're not facing reality. Even that is abnormal. And these days, people that may be considered normal are now abnormal because being normal is not normal anymore. Are you following me? Not stalking me. Are you following me? Everybody has a problem. Everybody has a personality quirk. I don't like Dr. Phil. I don't. He has, he sits in a chair on his show saying that he is the best and smartest person in the world. Nobody's smarter than he is. Sound familiar? Don? No one's smarter than he is. If you're on his show and you criticize or say something against Dr. Phil, he curls up into a little ball and spikes come out of his head. And he says, what are you talking about? What? I'm no good. I'm no good. Now, I don't know what I'm talking about. I've been doing this for 40 years. And you're telling me I don't know what I'm talking about? All right, then I'll just leave. I'll just leave. Then I won't help you at all. I won't help you. Then I'll just leave. Phil, that's a psychological condition that you've just displayed. And Dr. Phil's father, apparently, he talks about this on the show every once in a while. Dr. Phil's father was an alcoholic and never gave Dr. Phil any type of recognition or resignation or recognition. Which word fits there? It's recognition. He never said to Dr. Phil, I love you, because Dr. Phil's an unlovable person. He was a horrible father, apparently, and he was an alcoholic. And Phil says, and I had to work through that. Well, Phil, okay, what you're doing, you're giving everybody an excuse for why you've got some problems, Phil. But this is Dr. Phil. He has some tremendous ego problems. He has some illusions of grandeur. He curls up like a defensive ball if you start criticizing. He can't be criticized. Phil's got big problems. This is supposedly a doctor. I don't know anybody who doesn't have some overriding psychological problem. And it's adorable. But here's the thing. We're all human beings. Do you understand this? We weren't created in order to be perfect. Sounds nice. Doesn't happen. Everybody's got a problem. And if you know somebody long enough, that problem is going to materialize in your face. Let me give you an example. I know people that have been best friends forever. They went to school together, grade school, probably. And they were friends all of their lives. They went through puberty together. They went to college together. They were friends after college. They had babies together. They had families together. They developed together. They're great friends. One day, these friends that have been friends for 20, 30 years have an argument. And all of a sudden, one friend says to themselves, "She's horrible. She's an idiot. Can you believe she slept with my husband?" "Yeah, she did sleep with your husband because she has a problem." And all of a sudden, this friendship, which is like will go on forever, is soiled. Because nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. And you can't expect that they are. And I say this because of what we're going through. We have relationships that are in your face right now. There's no space involved in our relationships. The only successful relationship is with people that know that both of them aren't perfect. I have a saying, if you're married, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever the case may be, it's the way I look at it. I have certain strengths, and you have certain strengths. We're not the same. My strengths are not your strengths. Your strengths are not my strengths. My weaknesses, which I have, are my weaknesses. You have different weaknesses. But we put ourselves together, and we are a powerful couple. My strengths and your strengths, put them together, no one can stop us. So you combine yourselves, and you realize that not one person is everything. It takes both of you to be everything. I'm sorry to get soppy, but I had this discovery and this revelation recently, this aha moment where all of a sudden I said, aha. Nobody actually says that. If so, there's an abnormality. If someone just stops in the middle of a walk and puts their finger up in the air and goes, aha, that's mentally weird. Okay, Dr. Gail Saltz is going to join us. She's written a book, so we're going to speak to her. Okay, how you doing? You ready for that sandwich? No? Okay, fine. We're going to take a short commercial break because someone's got to pay for this, obviously. It's not going to be you. I'm not calling you cheap or anything, but you kind of are.
Are you the sort of person who feels vicarious excitement at the prospect of a robust discount? Then you need to pay us a visit at Jerome Cherrington's Emporium of Preposterous Values. Each and every day, our standard pricing model is an absolute affront to common retailing practices and could indeed be seen as an indication of mental instability. Consider, if you will, a 24-pack of your favorite coffee pods, if one happens to drink such a thing, a mere $2.99. Is that sensible in the least? No, I tell you, it is not. And what of this? Common t-shirts with witty sayings upon them, suitable for men, women, and children, depending upon how you've raised them, 10 for $6. This is uncanny pricing that quite simply flies in the face of all possible reason, and the only explanation for this behavior on my part is that I am not sane, frankly. Do not take my word for it. Instead, find your way here to Jerome Cherrington's Emporium of Preposterous Values, just off the motorway and beyond the roundabout, where our everyday retailing decisions are simply unnatural.
Hi, Dr. Saltz. How are you?
Very good, Ron. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure having you here. Dr. Gail Saltz is a psychiatrist and best-selling author. And this is an interesting piece called The Power of Different. It's the link between disorder and genius. The inference here is that in order to to be above the crowd, you have to be different.
So what I would say is not in order to mm-hmm. so much as actually having one of these differences, yeah. a symptom of mental illness, a learning disability, actually is hardwired linked to very particular strengths, depending on what the issue is you're struggling with. Mm-hmm. So that in some ways, people who do have these differences mm-hmm. Have a very particular ability, heightened creativity, original thought, innovative thought, pattern recognition, visual-spatial relation ability, photographic memory. It depends on yeah. what the issue is. But the point is that, to some degree, these people actually, yeah, have a bit of an edge in terms of the potential for genius or extraordinary talent.
Yeah. I mean, we look back at people like Einstein, I suppose, and I don't know much about him, but the connotation is that his focus was so extreme as a genius that he was not like the rest of us. And that makes...
I think there is, you know, of course, we can never... 100% retrospectively yeah. diagnose someone, but there's a lot of evidence, for instance, in Einstein's early life, that he could hyper-focus when mm-hmm. it came to, you know, physics and math and things that he was very engaged with, but that in other areas, he not so much. In fact, mm-hmm. he actually, in some ways, performed very poorly as a student in other
right.
subject matter
right.
And was even removed from school. And he had a lot of impulsivity and difficulty in relationships, all things that suggest attention deficit disorder, mm-hmm. Which is known to be linked to this high incidence of original thought, innovative, creative thought, because people with ADD have difficulty
yes.
regulating their concentration, but when they're engaged, they have sort of more creative thought, more original thought.
Yeah. I mean, there's a term that is, it's degrading, but the term is idiot savant, and it has the word idiot in it, so it's not a wonderful term, but its definition is interesting.
Well, so being a savant, which is a category often of people who actually are somewhere on the autism spectrum,
uh-huh.
Who have extreme, again, this is a link
yes.
between something that has to do with hardwiring, why it's difficult for you to, let's say, socialize
mm-hmm.
or look people in the face or read social cues. But that same hardwiring also often means for some people that they have extraordinary
yes.
ability. It may be in math. It may be verbal.
Yes.
It may be, as someone I profile in the book, for example, Matt Savage, is musically is a savant. I mean, he has
yes.
perfect pitch, yes. read music at a very young age, you know, played with the Boston Symphony as a child,
uh-huh.
You know, so yes, extraordinary ability.
Is there, I don't know what I'm talking about, but is it like a balance where if you're incredibly genius in one sense in the brain, that you may be lacking in another part of the brain? In other words, can you not have it all? It's just that the balance is different.
You know, I don't want to say you can't have it all, because as really what I elucidate in the book is we all have very different brains from each
right.
other. And so there are going to be, even amongst people who have no issues going on, mm-hmm. we have different wiring. But so some people obviously have a lot, let's say, you
yes.
know, a balance of a lot of different strengths. But for many people, and particularly in this arena that I'm talking about, there does seem to be one area
yes.
of really, you know, intense ability or strength. And so, for instance, you might be sort of more on the mathy side or more on the visual spatial side
right.
Or more on the, you know, what we used to call Asperger's,
yes.
But now we call mild autism. They were thought of as these sort of little adults.
Right.
Why can they speak that way? Because
right.
they had incredible verbal
right.
skills.
Right.
So, yes, there is often one area that's really
yeah.
stands out.
Then there's what I see is that when you have incredible abilities, then your social skills may lack because your social reaction is that I'm alone in the world. Nobody understands me. I don't mix with people. I know I'm different. And then you start getting like depressed, and those start turning into anxiety. And I mean, does that feed into that area, or is it all brain chemical?
Well, no, I think you're bringing up a super important point, which is, you know, it's 2017,
yes,
but we still stigmatize mental health issues. And the problem with that is that often people who are struggling do feel isolated. They
sure.
do feel alone. They don't feel that they can say what's going on and feel still embraced, mm-hmm. let's say, socially in society. And that keeps people from getting treatment. It hurts people's self-esteem. It may cramp their ability to, frankly, demonstrate the gift that they have. And it's important for everyone, but for parents to recognize that these are common. You know, evolutionarily, there's a reason that these have stuck around, these kinds of problems. And to some degree, it may be because of the things, the strengths that come along with it. But close to half of all Americans have, at some point in their life, a mental health diagnosis. So it's not like this is a rare thing, but we still, unfortunately, shame people. And that does keep them isolated, which, as you point out, can make them feel more depressed.
Yeah, well, even the president does it, so I guess it's okay. anyway, no comment. You don't have to comment. Don't say anything.
Goldwater rule. Can't comment.
Yeah, can't comment. So is the message that we should embrace people that we have talked about in that category, and that would help socially bring that back to everybody having worth?
Yes. I think that we need to recognize that if you are suffering with one of these issues, you know, the brain is an organ like any other organ. This is not your fault. This is not a moral failing. You know, this is a, you know, something going on with neurons, something going on with chemicals, something that needs attention and needs treatment, because treatment will mean that you can get back on track and suffer far less. And that's important. So I'm certainly saying people should get treatment where needed, but I'm also saying that we should recognize and help them recognize the strength that they have and be able to utilize that and play to that, whether it's for, you know, for vocation or for the greater good of society. I mean, if you look back at the Einsteins and the Van Goghs and the Hemingways and the Abraham Lincolns, I mean, where would we be without them? You know, the most iconic geniuses in history did have a mental health issue, or learning disability. And, you know, if we removed them because of stigma, you know, there would be no history there, if you know what I'm saying.
I mean, I go as far to say, and I'm not in your field, I go as far to say that every one of them did. Michelangelo,
they were
all like extraordinary people who were so focused that it and so talented that they became outcasts.
Well, you know what? It's not because they were talented. It's because they had this difference about
them
that really isolated them. And so even though they contributed so much to our world, right, in art and music and leadership, they suffered a lot in their lifetimes because socially, you know, they had difficulty integrating.
Yeah. This fascinating subject. We've not talked about it on the show before, and I thought we had talked about everything. This is pretty cool. The book's available everywhere?
It is pretty cool. It is pretty cool. I hope, you know, it's out today.
Mm-hmm.
I hope people will take a read, because undoubtedly they or someone in their lives or their child will have something to contend with. And I really try to give people a path for how to make the most of their gift.
Great. And actually, if there is someone like that, they might find comfort in the book in the sense that, I guess, you know, with any, if you want to call it disease or any differences, we always find comfort when we find other people that are in the same boat as we are. And
well, I think if people will take a look at the numbers,
yeah.
they will see there are many people in that boat.
Yeah.
We just don't talk about it. And
well, we are now. Yes,
I think it is important. Yeah. It is important to recognize that they're not alone and to seek some help.
Yeah. Is there a website people can visit for more information?
Sure. My website is www.drgailsaltz.com,
mm-hmm.
Or they can tweet me also, Dr. Gail Saltz, at Dr. Gail Saltz. And of course, it's available, you know, everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere
Wonderful.
Books are.
It's called The Power of Different, The Link Between Disorder and Genius. By the way, Saltz is Saltz. So that people can find you. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Are you hungry? I love spaghetti. Can't stop. I can't stop with this. I can't stop it. I can't. I'll eat a whole box of spaghetti. I won't even cook it. I love spaghetti. And when I fantasize about food, spaghetti's in the picture usually. Oh, it's not just the spaghetti itself. It's the connotation of spaghetti. The Italian family piling the pasta high with the sauce, the gravy, they call it. They're so into it, they call it gravy. And the meat sauce and the meatballs and that Italian accent. Hey, have us some spaghetti, have us some meatballs. Oh, even the way they say it, it's so appetizing. The grated cheese with the little cheese grater implement there, and they're going back and forth against a Parmesan wedge, and they say, "More, you had enough? You want more? You want more? Tell me when to stop. Tell me when to stop." No, pile it on. Forget the spaghetti. Just give me the cheese. Food is nothing but a place to put your cheese. It is. What am I going to do with this cheese? I put it on some food. I don't know. It's a good excuse to have cheese. You want some grated cheese? Yeah. Yeah, always. Always. Even when I'm having sex, I like someone to stand there with a cheese grater. And you want cheese on her? Yes. Put grated cheese on her. That would make it even better. That's enough. Talk about abnormal. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day. And I wish you peace. The longer I talk on this show, the more I shouldn't. All right, go away. Seriously, get out of here.